everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable episode 243, where we are talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, season 7, episodes 10, Bring on the Night, and episode 11, Showtime. My name is Caitlin, and I am joined today by fellow superfan Mai and newbies Mitch and Kristen. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
So before we jump into our discussion, just a reminder of how you can get in touch with us. You can email your spoiler-free thoughts to us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet to us at @re_watchable. You can comment on this post on hypeable.com, and you can find us over on Tumblr at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. So as usual, before we talk about our episodes, we are going to get you used to the sounds of our voices with some fun facts from each of us. So who has a good fun fact to start with? Kristen, shall we start with you?
Sure. So I haven't posted in the Hypeable group yet, but I got my Hypeable Secret Santa gift yesterday, and I have to post the picture in the group. I keep forgetting. But Danielle is my Secret Santa, so I know she'll hear this. And she got me the Sven from the holiday Frozen thing, and he has, like, ribbons and bells tied in his antlers and a little blanket on his back, and he's so cute! And I'm in love with him. So, yes, I love Sven, and Danielle spoils me. So, it was really fun to get last night. I had a long day at work yesterday, and I came home, and there's this box sitting on the doorstep, and I'm like, oh my god! Like, it was the perfect day for it. So, it's really cute.
Danielle was my Secret Santa a couple years ago, and she gave me a Harry Potter-themed box that included a handmade snitch ornament that has a place of honor on my tree.
Aww.
So Danielle is a wonderful Secret Santa.
She really is. She got me some socks and some hot cocoa and the Luna Funko where she's wearing the lion's head hat.
Aww,
thing.
That's adorable.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really cute. So she's a fantastic Secret Santa. She was brilliant. Singing Danielle's praises.
All right. Mitch, what's your fun fact this week?
I bought a haunted bed. Yes. It's some brand that I don't remember the name of, but apparently it's fancy, and it's in really great condition. I love four-poster beds. I bought it because someone posted on Facebook Marketplace that they were having an estate sale, and they posted this bed, and it was perfect, and it was only $40, and it's supposed to be like over $1,000. It's an antique, and it's beautiful, and it's likely haunted, but I'm super excited about it.
Housewanker.
Yes, hashtag housewanker. This one's for you, Natalie.
Well, just surround it with some salt. You'll be good to go.
Contain it just to my bed, so it can't escape to the rest of my house.
So we'll be excited to hear about all your horrible nightmares and scary things coming out of the mattress to get you in the future.
Well, I didn't buy the mattress for them. I only bought like the bed frame. I would never buy like a mattress off of Craigslist.
Used mattress.
Yeah,
that's
not,
no, thank you.
Isn't that kosher in my book?
If it has like bed knobs, check them and make sure that the bed doesn't travel to other lands. Because you've ever seen bed knobs and broomsticks, you know, could be a good bed. You never know. I don't know why that came to my head just now, but it did. Anyway.
All right. And Mai, what's your fun fact this week?
I'm seeing Star Wars tomorrow. And I'm slightly excited. Just a tiny, tiny, tiny bit.
Can any of us even say anything, seeing as we've seen it? I feel like no reaction.
I was going to say,
Yeah, no reaction is even worth it right here. We're just going to no comment you, Mai. As a newbie, I'm going to no comment you.
I'm excited for you to see it. That's all I can say.
HMU, when you have, I want to chat.
I made some comments on Twitter. We can talk later.
So my thing is I've been like favoriting things, and I'm like, okay, I'm not retweeting, but it's still showing up in people's feeds. Like emo Kylo Ren, like I'll like favorite something he says, and I'll be like, oh crap, what if like Mai's gonna see this?
Well, I've muted so many words.
Can you mute like a name like emo Kylo Ren? So could you mute like his name Kylo Ren?
Yeah.
Good, because he's not tweeting like things that are like keywords, you know what I mean? So I was afraid that you were gonna see them when you told me this today, that you hadn't seen it. I was like, oh, oops.
I haven't seen anything actually, so.
That is amazing. You haven't seen a single review or anything?
Nope.
Good for you. Well, I'm really eager to hear what you think.
I'm considering the main big thing got spoiled for the last one, so...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Good luck avoiding that one. Well, cool. That's super exciting. I'm really happy that all of us are seeing it so that we can all finally talk about it. Like, what's the statue? Like, a week?
I guess. Somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, my fun fact was going to be that I saw Star Wars last night, but we went to an IMAX showing, but we got the wrong glasses, so the whole movie was blurry.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I saw you tweet that. Like, what kind of wrong glasses can they give you? Like, regular
3D? I guess there are special ones for IMAX 3D, and we just got the regular 3D glasses.
Could you tell during the previews, or was it already too late?
I mean, we didn't realize it till like the previews had started and we were all the way at the back of the theaters and it was completely packed. So we weren't going to like weave through everything in the dark and go figure out what was wrong.
Yeah, that is the worst.
So I watched Star Wars and it was, not totally blurry, but like it was not clear. So I need to go see it again when it's actually clear.
That's so sad. Yeah.
But I'll leave my other thoughts to be muted by Mai on Twitter.
Must be such a process to unmute everything, gosh.
No, it's, a week, 24 hours.
Oh, you set timers on it. That makes sense.
Uh-huh.
Cool.
All right. Well, let's move on from Star Wars to Buffy. We have double Buffy this week, two episodes that I love very much. We have Buffy season 7-10, Bring On the Night, and 7-11, Showtime. And our synopsis for both of these episodes reads, in these episodes, Buffy loses a fight against Nosferatu, and Giles is still dead and likely the first, sad face. When Buffy is broken down and battered, the first Giles tells everyone to go home, show's over, apocalypse is happening. However, Buffy tells the Hellmouth that it can choke on her, further inspiring her in the Slayer-to-be's fight against the first. Giles and Anya set off to seek an oracle with lots of eyes who reveals that they done messed up in resurrecting Buffy. When Buffy takes a final bite out of Nosferatu, the Slayers-to-be are inspired to fight the good fight against the first. Willow is forced to do a shield charm, and Spike is finally freed from evil's grasps. So, after all that discussion last week of how Giles is clearly dead,
he's still
there's
dead.
No way he's dead, could have survived that. He walks in the front door, he's just there with some potential Slayers. So,
I'm all about the hunt theory.
There's a few things to unpack here. So, first Giles. Mitch sounds like he's sure that he's still dead.
Yeah, like he hugs Buffy when he sees her. That's a thing. And it was just so obvious right then and there. If it wasn't already that I knew in the context that he had to be the first, it was the fact that he didn't hug her that I knew he was the first. They can't hide this from me. And it's really silly because he's talking just like Eve was when she was the first. It's always like depressing and downers and we can't win and there's no way and all that kind of stuff is just so specific to like the depressing elements that the first introduces.
What do you think, Kristen? Do you think that's real Giles or is Giles the first?
Okay, so call me gullible, but I didn't think anything of the fact that he was back. I can't believe I didn't put it together. Like, I can't believe I didn't notice it. Because, I don't know how he could have survived that thing at the end of the other episode. Like, I remember, at the end of that episode going, well, how the heck would he make it through that? And then all of a sudden he's back and I didn't question it. Like, I don't know why. But yeah, I think it's very likely that this is the first. The only thing that had me wondering if it could possibly be the real Giles and not the first was that I couldn't remember if, like, Eve and him were in the room at the same time and could the first, appear as two people at the same time in the same room. Like, that had me a little confused. I wasn't sure how that was going to work. But, other than that, a lot of the signs point to this isn't actually Giles. So I'm not sure, but I think it's a very good theory to say that it's not really him.
No, you bring up a good point with the different like Eve and Giles and Drusilla all kind of existing in the same what looks like timeline, but I feel like we're just being shown bits of scenes from different points in the
plot. Well, yeah, like the Drew and Eve thing didn't worry me because they're in two separate places, so I just assumed that when the first was appearing as Eve or whatever, that Drew wasn't there with Spike. Like,
yeah,
she was out of the room or whatever. Yeah. And then when she needed to be there as Eve, you know, and the opposite was true too. Like, Eve wouldn't be there when she was with Spike. So I don't know if that's just me assuming that. Also, this is like the first evil, you know, terrible awfulness, so maybe they can be six places at once. I don't know.
I think they would be a little bit too OP if that's what they could do. It would make it really difficult for Buffy to be the first. Although, then again, once you know someone's the first and or dead, it's like, okay, you can't fool me again. But then what if Giles really, like, what? I mean, we have resurrections. What if he comes back and he's no longer the first? He's real Giles, but Buffy doesn't trust him because she's already discovered that he's the first. So that could be a good plot point if they wanted to write that in.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm
still for Giles being alive, but he's not.
Yeah. I mean, I'm all for that too, but I sincerely doubt he's alive.
Yeah, his spidey senses were not tingling. He didn't know it was coming, and that was it. Goodbye. Yeah. I mean, we're going to have like a more emotional scene. That's the thing. I know I talk about this often with you, Kristen, about the Vampire Diaries having like these fake out deaths that aren't viable because they're not emotional. Giles wasn't either, but it will be when we get there, when Buffy discovers it, because she has to like discover the body or something. We have to have like a funeral for it to be a big deal. But in the meantime, they can't have that reveal, so they can't have the emotion.
Right, exactly.
We'll get there. He'll be dead soon.
And then we'll all cry.
Yes. Oh, God, it's better not be like the body. This is going to be horrible.
All I'm saying is just notice whether he's touching things or not.
He's not. We're good to go on the first Giles. We're launched.
So Giles, or maybe quote-unquote Giles, we'll see, comes bringing some young ladies who turn out to be potential slayers. So we get the reveal that those girls that Buffy saw at the very beginning of the season being murdered were actually potential slayers. And what the first is after is the first is trying to wipe out the slayer line. So were you guys surprised by that? Did it make sense? What'd you think?
No, it made sense.
I thought it made a lot of sense. I didn't necessarily think that while it was happening, like when we were watching all of these random girls being killed, it didn't make sense. Like, I had no idea, but this makes total sense. Like, of course he would try and get rid of the most, you know, the most skilled first, the next in line first, and then kind of dwindle back to those that are a little less skilled, the ones that are less prepared, and so on and so forth. So yeah, I definitely makes a lot of sense now.
And I love the callback to Faith and them saying that they would have to, I think they said they had to kill Faith and then Buffy and then them. Whatever it was, I like that they're still keeping her in the idea of the show. And it's also curious that Faith hasn't come in yet. She has to. Like, we're talking about killing off the Slayers. You can't end the Slayer line without getting Faith in here. You can't have an off-screen death, I hope. So I hope that they bring her back soon, and then she comes in to fight against the first. And who knows who falls in battle, but that could be pretty exciting. It's been a while since we've seen her.
Agreed. This would be a good time for them to call Los Angeles, because Angel has a distinct connection to the first as well, having been almost manipulated into committing suicide. So, you know, Faith is in prison over there, and then Angel has this connection. You'd think maybe just a phone call of like, hey, we know you probably have your own apocalypse going on, but just FYI, this is happening, so you just might want to be aware. Might have been a good thing.
We'll have Willow show up in the lobby again and not say anything. That'll be our understanding. That'll be it. Yeah, you guys are talking about the fact that there could be crossovers here, but I'm not seeing them happen. I'm waiting. Maybe I still have to wait.
All in good time. All in good time.
I know we'll get there eventually, but it's been a while. I really thought we would already be yeah, there. I thought we'd have some more connection so far, so it's interesting.
Patience, young Padawans.
Like, what's Angel going to do if on his, the rest of his show he's fighting over on Buffy because he has to fight this final apocalypse and they're trying to make season 7 the biggest, the baddest. So, like, yeah, Angel should be here. But if he goes here, then literally he's off of his own show. So this kind of feeds off of itself into a horrible way. I don't know how they write this.
No comment.
Fair enough.
So how are you guys feeling about the potentials and their dynamic in the house so far?
I wish I liked them more, but they're probably fleshed out in the comics, if I had to guess.
Well, duh.
They feel like the comics, the comics fodder, if I had to pick anything in particular.
I mean, I like the idea of having all the potentials there. Like, it's kind of, it was nice to see their first impression of Buffy when she walks in, and like, Kennedy is kind of like, oh, it's you. Like, you know, she kind of seems unimpressed and they don't really seem to get it. And then slowly as these episodes go on, like, you just watch them kind of see more and more of why Buffy is a total badass. Like, they get the picture as the episodes go on. So, like, to see them all be unimpressed by her at the beginning and then as it moves on, it's very cool. So I did like, I'd like having them around for that reason alone, but they're not too bad. The one girl was the British girl, I don't know her name, is kind of annoying.
The one that's knackered for a snack or whatever she says.
Yeah, she's kind peckish. Of annoying, but
peckish.
The rest of them aren't too bad.
Yeah,
peckish. Yeah.
Yeah, the peckish girl. I like the non-peckish girl.
And here I thought hungry was English for hungry.
Yeah, that's my favorite girl, Rona. She's best, because she just doesn't have time for this.
I mean, poor Rona. She didn't even know about any of this, and then all of a sudden gets thrust into this situation.
Yeah. Sucks. It's like, oh, okay, sure. Yeah, let's go to Sunnydale. Why not?
First thing that happens is she gets almost killed, so sounds like it's going to be a fun time for her.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
What about you, Mai? How do you feel about the potentials at this point?
They complain a lot. And, well, as usual, I don't like that Buffy's being given the responsibility of, hey, here, you have this group of unknown people, you take care of them. Like, why does she have to take care of everything? Why can't someone else think of the solution? Why can't someone else train these weird little puppies?
Because all their watchers were killed. Including the entire Watchers Council, was just exploded. Can't forget that. So there's really nowhere else for them to go.
Yeah, well, more people in the house. Anya could help out. Not like she's doing anything.
I like when she's just mumbling to herself as she's cooking. She's just so frazzled by all the company. She's just like sitting over the kitchen stove, and like the subtitles even go, Anya continues to mumble to herself. And I was like, same.
She's throwing water at Andrew.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hard same, Anya. Hard same.
I really loved the, like, maybe we should try hot water. Yes! And then Buffy walks in the room. It's like, we were doing nothing. Like, beautiful. It's just genius.
I love how little time Dawn has for Andrew. She just cannot stand him.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, and same. In that moment, I was Dawn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really tough to like these Slayers to be, because you're right. They do complain a lot. They sit around and have depressing slumber parties. None of it's fun.
Well, to be fair, none of it is fun.
Yeah.
I guess.
They came in a really bad place. I get that.
But they could be proactive about it.
There's is it Kennedy that likes the crossbow? She's like the most proactive Slayer to be. She actually wants to get up and fight. Yeah.
What really struck me watching them is I was really struck by how they all seem to be around the age that Buffy was when the series started. And it just, like, watching that scene, I think it's in Showtime, where Buffy and Willow and Xander go into the kitchen while all the potentials are arguing in the dining room. And just
children.
Yeah. They looked so much older. And I would just, it really hit me how far they have come, because that was basically them in season one.
They probably cast younger too, if anything.
Yeah, they really did look older, though. Like, when Buffy's standing there and they're, like, about to start their discussion, you know, it's kind of them talking in their heads or whatever. Yeah, it kind of dawned on me, like, how much they've been through and how old they feel to us now. And, like, compared to these little youngins, it's like, wow. You know, we don't necessarily think of them as the older, mature crowd because Xander. They really are. Like, they do have a lot of experience and a lot going for them now that if you think back to season one and the, you know, wide-eyed, just, what is happening? Giant what are chasing us kind of thing is, like, it's they've come a long way. They really have.
According to the shooting script, Annabelle is supposed to be 16 and Kennedy is supposed to be 19.
19. Okay, so that kind of answers something here, because I was wondering if it was, like, legit that Kennedy was hitting on Willow, because Willow felt really uncomfortable, almost like, oh my god, a young teen is hitting on me, but I guess if she's 19, that makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah, and that also explains why she was like, it's probably too late for me, when Eve is like, we're all gonna die.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, fake Eve.
Well, it all makes sense that these Slayers to be are kind of aging out in a way, because Buffy's been around longer than any Slayer ever.
Well, not ever.
No, is there more? I have to read these, not the comics, but I assume books that are all about all the other Slayers, because I'm interested a little bit. I don't know if I'm interested enough to read that much, though. We'll see. We'll see how the series ends and if it actually makes me want more.
Wiki it when it's done.
Yeah, Wikipedia is probably better.
But yes, so we've got these potentials, and none of them are clearly to the standard that Kendra was at when she was called back in season two. Like, you have them all being like, I've never even seen a vampire. I've seen a blurry picture of one time. They are out of their element, for sure. So it seems like maybe the Bringers have been going after the most likely to be called. It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the ones best prepared, and these are, like, the next generation, almost. Like, you have the, you know, the teenagers that were, you know, probably in the middle of preparations, you know, as Buffy's aged up and has lasted longer than most. And this is, like, the next set, you would think. And it seems like the Bringers have gotten to all of that first set. So these are the ones that, you know, minus Kennedy, are young and still just getting into their training and, like, just sort of getting to finding out about all of this.
Honestly, I hope Buffy sends them home soon, because it's really hard to keep track of them all. And I just, once again, I find myself, it's really difficult to care about these people that don't have anything positive to say or anything funny other than, like I said, Rona's, like, the best. If she could stay and the rest could just go, I'd be happy.
She can't send them home, though, because then
they'll all get killed.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah. It's not going to end well.
Mitch strikes again.
Yeah.
I find them kind of, like, as a group, kind of hard to care a lot about. I'm more invested in what they represent,
yeah,
than necessarily them as individuals at this point. I think it's also worth keeping in mind that the Slayer line is not with Buffy right now. So if they kill Buffy, they're not going to call a new Slayer.
True.
That's why Buffy's, of faith. That's why it's made, I think, pretty apparent that Buffy's job is not to continue the Slayer line, but to make sure it continues, because she has to protect those that can go on after her.
And she's technically the only active Slayer, because Faith's in prison.
Yeah.
But the Slayer line is with Faith. So Faith has to die for another Slayer to be called.
Yeah, we're talking about calling. I'm not sure what's going on with everything with the eyeball guy. Can we talk about the eyeball guy, what he's talking about? Because it feels like it fits here.
Kordok's Eye.
What's his name? Kordok's Eye, yeah.
All right, so we've got Anya and Giles going to find this prophet, basically, or oracle, who will tell them about what's going on with the First. And what they find out is basically that things fell out of balance when Buffy was resurrected, and that's allowed the First to rise.
So my follow-up question to that, relating to what we just said about Faith, is why would it matter that Buffy was resurrected that affects the Slayer line if she's no longer in the Slayer line? She's already passed it on to Kendra and then Faith, I guess. So why did that resurrection matter? Why did it let this in? It feels like it only would be affected by Faith having anything going on with the Slayer line, because like we just said, like, Buffy's out. She doesn't resurrect anyone else, or she doesn't call the next Slayer.
Because there's only supposed to be one.
Yeah, but like, that should have been an issue in season one when she was Xander used CPR to bring her back to life, not when she was resurrected. Do you see my issue there? Or maybe the show was meaning that. Do you think they were talking about Xander's CPR when Anya just assumed it was her resurrection? I'm confused. I don't know which they're talking about. I don't know what the eyeball guy was referencing.
The second time used magic, so yeah. It's a worse problem.
Well, I figured that. That's where I'm still confused as to why that would affect the Slayer line if she's no longer of the Slayer line.
I think it's mostly the magical return of a second when there's only supposed to be one.
So it's like a double whammy. Like, already we had two, and then you brought her back the second again.
Yeah, I think it's all tied into the magic of it and how it was against nature. Like, her being brought back with CPR is just like human biology or whatever. So that's one thing. But when you really distort the natural order through pretty hardcore magic, as we know from it being said over and over and over again, there are consequences to magic.
I always just think of Spike riding off at his motorcycle saying that there's always consequences, and he's right. I still think we're in the consequences of that resurrection, and I still think it was pretty stupid. They probably really should have just let Buffy stay dead. That would have been better. We have no show, but at least the universe would be better off, I think. I mean, there'd be another Slayer. It's not like that would end.
Well, that's exactly what Anya says. She says it's all our fault, and we screwed it up, and we should have let her stay dead.
You know, it was really unclear.
This whole thing, this whole discussion needs that.
When in doubt, blame magic.
Well, that's the thing. It feels like, you know, it really was unclear, or it feels like in Doctor Who when they're all timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly. It feels like when they get into magic in the show, they start to just say, consequences, lol, and they just do whatever they want because they're, like, able to. Like, we can't call them out on not following rules that don't exist because they don't tell us the rules. And that feels a bit unsacred to me. It feels like you need to have, like, they have this Bible of continuity and whatnot, but they just seem to skip over some of the finer details of the magic rules that end up mattering the most, especially now that that's brought about the First, and we still don't know the exact details of it all. Maybe I need a little bit more hand-holding here, which I usually don't want in a show, but the show I feel like I need just a just a smidgen more.
Well, I think a lot of it's that it's unintended consequences, so they don't know. And as Giles, or quote-unquote Giles, depending on your perspective, says, you know, the first predates everything. That's why they're not finding any references to the first in their research. The first is so ancient, it predates, like, the written word. So why would anyone know that that was going to be a consequence?
I guess I need to read the comics and or the Wikipedia.
Or just go with what they tell you.
Yeah.
Don't question the science, man.
Don't question. Oh my God, you're right. I'm questioning the science again. That's why I'm getting into this. Oh.
So by bringing back Buffy, they screwed it up. Just go with it. So we also, speaking of things that may or may not touch things and may or may not be the first, Buffy has some dreams with Joyce in them. Mm. What did you guys think about these? Did you think that was actually Joyce? Did you think Buffy was just manifesting her mother? Did you think it was the first? What'd you think?
I think that these little... It's weird that these seem to be coming from her, like, just passing out randomly. I wanted to kind of think they were just dream Joyce, like actual just normal dreams that her mother showed up in, because this is a stressful time and she's feeling really vulnerable. So it makes some sense that her mother would show up in her dreams. But the fact that it's not like she's asleep and her mom comes to her, like, you know, at night when normal people sleep, it happens in the middle of the day. It happens when she's at work. I wonder if there's something going on that's causing these little visions. I don't know if it's the first. I don't know if it's something else, but because of the situation of like how she sees her, it makes it feel a little less like genuine, a little less possible that it's just dream Joyce.
See, I'm inclined to say this is the same Joyce that we saw in Conversations with Dead People. I think this is legitimately Joyce, and it's meant to be confusing because we're shown Cassie in that same episode being the first. That kind of gives credence to our theory, Kristen, that the first can only be one person at a time, if we are to run that way, because that would make more sense to me. Like I said, it makes this the first enemy less OP, because if you have it as being just Cassie in that episode, then that makes sense that Joyce would warn everyone of basically what's going on. And I guess she kind of sounded a bit evil. Yeah. It's with Dawn saying Buffy won't choose you, but I think that's true. I think this is just a wiser Joyce that's been dead for a while. So she sees some stuff and she knows that she has to warn her daughters, and she's doing it kind of like outside of like a loving perspective, but more of just like, these are facts. Like, I think she's losing the emotion because she's dead. That's fine. But when she's telling Buffy here, you have to rest, that your friends use you too much, that doesn't sound as first to me as Giles does when he's like, guess we all need to quit. Buffy's internally bleeding. When Eve's just like, this sucks, we're all going to die. Like, those were very the first, but this Joyce just, it sat differently in my mind for some reason. Maybe I'm just skewed wrong. I don't know. Because I'm also judging this just off of Eve, I guess.
Well, this Joyce feels very different from Dawn's Joyce.
Yeah.
In Conversations with Dead People. Like, that Joyce felt wrong. Just the way she was appearing, the fact that you saw her as a dead body on the couch, and, like, then she came to her all, like, glowing and extra. Like, it was so extra that you knew that it couldn't be Joyce. Whereas here, it's literally just her mom showing up in her dreams. So it makes me feel like this isn't the first, whether it's actually dream Joyce or if it's something else that we don't know, whether it's the powers that be or some random thing. Like, I there's something going on here. I'm just not sure that it's the first getting in Buffy's head.
It could just be as simple as they wanted to bring the actress back for the final season, and they didn't really care how they wrote her in. They were just going to get her in, whatever, because they don't really need to answer this. We would never need to know the difference. It still had a big emotional impact on us with Dawn talking to her. It made a very creepy episode, and it was very cinematic when she was rushing around the house with all the blood and all that. But this one could still be either. This could be the same kind of Joyce that Buffy, you're right, dreams up of even when she's doing the crazy, when she's dreaming that she's in an insane asylum. That could be this Joyce. I mean, Joyce is, I think, meant to be more symbolic than actually something we understand. And that I'm okay with not questioning the science with as much.
She hands Buffy a book.
Does she?
So I'm just saying she touched something.
That is very true.
Was it an
very
important true. Book?
She said, hand me the Watcher Council diaries or whatever. And then the book is handed to her, and then she looks up and sees who hands it to her, and it's Joyce.
But she was dreaming, so anyone can touch anything in a dream. Meaning that it's probably not the first, because the first doesn't seem to get into dreams.
I don't know.
Maybe we'll have a final reveal, Kristen. We'll have a thing where Joyce comes back and is like, yeah, that was me, girls. I told you.
That wasn't me. This was me.
Yeah. Once the first is dead, so we're sure that we're sure it's not the first Joyce.
Yeah.
Because we're going to kill the first, right?
I mean, can you kill the first evil?
I feel like Buffy's going to find a way. This is a little bit too early on in the season to not get to that point. They had the reveal, if you're not going to kill it, I don't know what the point of this season is, let alone this season.
Welcome to the home office.
There could be some trapping or, finding a way to put the first evil back where he was before he was awakened by the resurrection stuff. So I don't necessarily think she's going to be able to kill it, but maybe
trap it.
Lock it back away where it was or something like that.
Like the general idea of Lost. They're trapping and corking evil back in where it was found. Hopefully no one else releases it, but they will in the comics.
Hashtag no comment. Mai, how do you feel about seeing Joyce?
Oh, that's a loaded question.
Tell me your thoughts.
Oh, it's so sad. Because the way that Buffy says mom, it brings back everything about the body. And on the other hand, Joyce's hair is just the worst.
Isn't it the same as it always has been?
It feels so early seasons to me, but maybe I'm wrong.
Are you saying everyone else's hair is advanced and Joyce's just has stayed the same?
Well, not everyone can be Anya.
Yeah. Oh God, she has new or Cordelia. Their hair bending if I've ever seen it.
Anya wins. Anya wins. Isn't the hair she bending? Blonde again?
It's a tight race.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm restricted by the hashtag no comment, but I enjoy seeing Joyce again.
It's very powerful for Buffy.
And also Dawn and previous ones.
Yes. When she shows up, it's a reminder of how young Buffy still is, I think. Because, we talked about how you can see how much they've grown since season one. But Buffy and her friends, they're still really young. They're in their early 20s at this point. So they've got the weight of the world literally on their shoulders. And they're still so young. And I feel like seeing Joyce again is just sort of a reminder that Buffy is so young, and then you're reminded of how much pressure everyone is putting on her. She's literally listening to her friends and even Giles say, she's our only hope. It has to be her. If she can't defeat this thing, we're out of luck. And she's sitting there beaten and bruised and couldn't beat this thing. Beat the uber vamp, and they're all just going on what if she can't do it? It's too much. And it just seems... Go ahead.
And it's not even how can we help her? It's she has to do it alone.
Yeah.
Ugh. My heart.
It's too much, and it just from being reminded of how young she really is just makes my heart break for her. And she is, we see very much in this episode, she's not sleeping. She's like falling asleep in the middle of like her conferences at work kind of thing. Like she is so tired.
Mm-hmm.
And my heart just breaks for her in these episodes.
Why can't she be a little pumpkin belly?
It seems to be when our protagonists have to fight the biggest of all the bads, they lose the most sleep. Kind of like when Aang has to fight the Fire Lord and he just starts dreaming of sheep doing all crazy things. Buffy's sheep are Joyce, though. So I'm team, I think, Joyce is a dream. To wrap up that after hearing you guys talk about it, it feels more like Joyce is a dream.
It very well could be. You know, it was really unclear.
If anyone is listening to this rewatchable Buffy and hasn't listened back to Avatar yet, they must hate us because they're like, I'm tired of that reference.
So we find out what Mitch dubbed Nosferatu is. What we've taken to calling the Uber Vamp is
Little Khan.
Yes, this is the Turok Khan, who Giles tells us is basically like a Neanderthal version of vampires. And we see Buffy. Rude. And, I mean, just scientifically speaking, just is pre-evolution of modern vampires.
So I was wrong in this being the first ever vampire, kind of. I mean, it's still sort of like the first type of vampire, so I wasn't all the way wrong, I guess.
It's very ancient, and we see that some of the things that kill modern vampires, like a stake to the heart, does not work.
Mm.
Holy water does, and I sort of love that moment when Buffy steals the holy water from Andrew after Andrew had been so insulted to get the holy water, and it actually works.
Yeah.
That was delightful.
It's like, you had the only useful weapon out of any of these, so what's your problem?
I was a bit shocked when you couldn't stake it through the heart, but it could be for the fact that this is a vampire of pure origin without any human body. It's just pure demon, and demons don't have hearts, I'm going to go with. I think that was the understanding there.
Or maybe its heart is in its ass or something.
Stake its ass, Buffy.
Just start poking it with the stake and seeing if anything makes it dust.
Poke it in the butt.
It really bothers me when they have vampires fall down into from a large height into like a stack of wood or something and not die. This vampire does that in the Thunderdome. It like falls down on a bunch of like Xander's construction site wood, and it has plenty of splinters. I'm sure some got up its butt. It probably would have died if the heart was in its butt at that point.
I'm sure some got up its butt.
Well, it doesn't have to worry about it for long.
Yes, that's true.
But let's go back to what we see of the Uber Vamp in the first episode. This thing basically kicks Buffy's butt. Like, we have really not seen Buffy get her butt kicked this way, except maybe from Glory. Otherwise, she just is demolished by this thing. How did you guys, especially the newbies, feel seeing Buffy get so soundly defeated by the Turok Khan?
I mean, I expected that this was gonna go differently. Like, we've seen her kick some general ass. Like, vampires don't put up a ton of a fight for her, like the normal ones. And she's come up against some, you know, really just awful opponents, like with Glory and some of the others. Like, she's come across some really formidable enemies. And so, like, watching this physical fight was kind of hard. Like, it's hard to see someone literally just like basically beat the crap out of her. Like, she didn't really land any hits. She didn't, you know, we've always seen her have some sort of success or find a way or whatever. But, you know, it was really hard to watch her just get her ass handed to her.
Kelly had the same effect that they did back when they didn't want to show Tara as being anyone but like a meek person who doesn't have a lot of confidence. They stripped the actress of all their makeup, which is so weird that our society would see that as being like broken or sad or bad. But unfortunately, that's kind of just the way it goes. Like, I'm pretty sure she's always wearing like mascara, and they took that off to make her look like even more beaten up, which like I said, is probably its own commentary on society, if anything. But regardless, I thought that they did a really good job of making her look very beaten up there. It was like almost disturbing seeing her in that kind of a crippled state.
And we hear from one of the potentials that it lasts like a couple days, which we know Buffy has accelerated healing, but it was such a sound beating that it took her days to recover from it, which is pretty intense.
And I was, I think, really disturbed too, how at one point she is fighting Nosferatu and she spits blood into his face. Because she probably has some internal bleeding, and that's how she's able to get out. Like, she uses her own injury to escape him. That's how beaten up she is.
Can I just say, when she did that, I was sitting there, like, and my first reaction was, why would you spit blood in the ancient vampire's mouth? Like, vampires drink blood. Like, you wouldn't think that would be a negative thing. Like, it kind of freaked me out, because then she runs and he, like, chases her even more, like, he seems more intrigued by her after she spits blood at him. Like, it was like, that seems like a bad plan.
And how didn't he die when she crushed him with all those pipes? That was something else.
Because he's an uber vamp.
Yeah, he's incredibly durable,
I guess.
Sadly.
Only as much as his head is, though, apparently.
Yeah.
This is where guns really would come in handy, I think. Buffy doesn't like them, but it would only take one headshot, and that guy would probably be done. Maybe I'm crazy.
I don't know. I think it was the actual, like, severing of the head. I don't think it was you had to injure his head, because she landed some hits to the face on that guy and it didn't do much. But, like, you know, I don't necessarily think a bullet to the head would have taken him down. It may have given her the opportunity. Like, it may have knocked him out or something for her to take his head off. But I think the actual act of separating his head from his body is what allowed her to dust him.
And the whole fight, I was waiting for her to go for the eyes, because that seems like the best way to take down like a really tough villain in any given supernatural circumstance. Go for the eyes, because that's probably their most vulnerable spot, and then they can't see and they can't fight you as well. Unless you're a basilisk, and then you can sniff out Harry, but regardless.
So, just briefly, Camden Toy, who plays the Uber Vamp, also played Gnarl and a gentleman in Hush.
Yeah, he's creepy.
I can see some resemblance between the gentleman and the face of the Uber Vamp a little bit.
I noticed it a little bit too, yeah. It's not completely unrecognizable. It did seem a little familiar when the Nosferatu guy sort of showed up. So, yeah, a little bit alike.
I'm surprised he's not played by the guy who plays all the other tall, scary, slender people in Hollywood.
Doug Jones?
Yeah.
Not the
senator. He was also a gentleman.
He was a gentleman as well?
Pretty sure.
Well, we will get to more of how the fight goes down in a minute, but the first Bring on the Night basically is all about defeat. Buffy gets her butt kicked. One of the potentials runs away and gets murdered by the Uber Vamp because she's being dumb. Like, if you're going to run away, at least run away during the day.
Yeah, that seems...
Yeah,
ill-advised.
It was not the brightest move. I mean, fear can make you do really stupid things. And these girls have got to be beyond terrified.
Yeah.
But that was an ill-advised move, and she paid with her life, unfortunately. Buffy gets her butt kicked by the Uber vamp to the point that she's just debilitated. So that Willow tries to do a locator spell, and it completely backfires, and she's temporarily possessed by the first. So this is what's keeping her from really doing a lot of the really powerful magic she's capable of doing. So even though her power should be an asset, they don't really want to risk the potential of turning her power on them. So Willow's defeated in that way. Buffy's defeated. Basically, everyone's terrified. So we end the episode with Buffy turning the whole thing on its head and saying, we're going to declare war on them. So if anyone else wants to leave, do it now, because from now on, we're an army and we're going to take it to them. So how did you guys feel about that shift from Buffy at the end after she has overheard her friends just terrified and thinking she can't do anything? And then she decides, we're going to take it to them.
As she gives that speech, which I think we're going to get to in favorite lines, I think, maybe, I don't know. As she gives that speech, like, it made so much sense. Like, it, just the difference between being dragged into battle versus choosing to go to battle, like, it's come up a million times before with, you know, Harry Potter and a million other, you know, fantasy series or whatever. You know, the choice to say, I'm going to put myself on the line. And, like, that's basically what Buffy's doing here. Like, they've been dragged into, you know, world-ending scenario after world-ending scenario, and they're trying to stop it once it gets there. And now she's like, you know what? We're done with that. It's coming. We know it's coming. We're going to meet it where it's at. Like, we're going to find it. We're going to hunt it out. We're calling the shots here, not this thing. And it makes a lot of sense. Like, I can see why after getting her butt kicked, like, it just reminds her, like, you know, I'm the Slayer. I'm going to do this. This is my job. I'm done, you know, being pushed around by all of these forces that think they can, you know, show up in my town and take me down. Like, it's empowering. And I think that's what she needed, was just something to give her the motivation. Like, she just needed to take it upon herself and say, you know, this is our fight now, not theirs.
And I'm glad that Buffy feels inspired, because I don't. I think they feel like these girls are only going to drag her down because she has to watch after them now. They're not really helping out too much, other than Kennedy with her love of Willow and her ability to use a crossbow. Those things could come in handy, but maybe not. Maybe she'll just die soon and we'll lose anyone useful, and then we'll have a lot more babysitting to do.
That was slightly depressing, Mitch.
I don't believe in them because they don't believe in themselves. So, like, what do I have to work off of there?
I mean, I don't know that we're supposed to think that they're the most capable fighters right now, because they're not.
Maybe we'll have a couple of training montages. Maybe then I'll believe in them a little bit more.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, you don't get superpowers till you get, like, called to be the Slayer. So they're just girls right now. They're just people,
I guess, but attitude is key in my eyes. I feel like they should, while being scared, use that fear in a better way. It is tough being ripped out of your life, especially if you're like 14. Some of those girls are pretty young. I have to give them some credit.
Think of Buffy at the end of season one in Prophecy Girl, when she finds out that it's her destiny to die at the Master's hand, and she has that speech to Giles where she says, I don't want to die, I'm only 16 years old. She felt the exact same way at their age. Yeah. And she had the superpowers.
That is true. I hope to like them better in the future. I hope that they come into a bit more of a fighting attitude, that Buffy really did inspire them by killing Nosferatu.
And then there's Xander, who 7 years later still can't fight.
He likes getting punched in the face. He's pretty good at getting punched.
Yeah.
All right, so we go to the next episode, and this is when we pick up Rona. We see Buffy, like, killing some bringers to protect her. But we also find out that the First has infiltrated the Potentials as one of their own, one of the Potentials had come into town and had been murdered. No one knew about it. And so the First took her place. So she basically was able to get all kinds of good information on what's going on in the Summers house, and no one knew. So how did you guys react when you realized that the First had been in their midst this whole time? And does that mess up your First Giles First theory?
No, I still think we have different timelines. Because I think that they don't... If I was to go back and watch, I would, A, go back and see if Giles is touching anything. B, I would try and see if Eve and Giles are ever in the same scene. But I don't think they are. And now that I'm thinking of it, I don't know. I could be wrong.
I mean, they were all, minus Buffy, they were all in the dining room talking about, like, what comes next or whatever. Like, they were all kind of present. So, I don't know. I don't know exactly what the First is capable of. If the First is capable of being Drusilla with Spike and Eve at the same time, then there's no reason why it can't also be Giles and Eve at the same time.
Right.
So, I'm not sure if it's capable of being two people in the same room at the same time, or, you know, or what. I was a little surprised by the Eve thing, but it makes a lot of sense. And, like, now the First knows just how successful it's been with killing the Potentials. Like, it got a lot of the experienced, really, like, ready Potentials out of the way by having the Bringers kill them right away. And now, you know, Buffy's allies are a group of unskilled 15, 16-year-old girls that don't really want to fight. They don't have that calling yet. Like, they don't, their watchers, you know, barely got to know any of them. Like, they haven't known them that long. So it's, I can see why this was really beneficial for the First and why it all happened. But, it did surprise me a little bit. I didn't see it coming.
I wasn't that surprised. Like I said, she was talking in a very down and out mode. And as we are meant to remember from Amends, the First wants to get Angel to commit suicide. So it fit with that. And all of that just, it flowed for me. I was like, okay. Like, it came to the point when they were all, like, sitting in the basement. And before they had to reveal it, I was like, oh, okay. Obviously, this is not Eve. Because she's talking really specifically about, like, we should just end this. Like, it felt like a suicide pact circle. It was getting really creepy. And I think that's how it was meant to feel.
How do we feel? So, did you think that the Potentials might... Well, I have in the... Someone wrote in the doc that mutiny is bubbling. So were you worried that they might abandon ship or try and take over?
I mean, none of them have the skill to really take over. And they saw what happened when you try to run away. Like, I think Eve was more just, like, fear-mongering. Like, just trying to, like, remind them all of just what's coming and how ineffectual they're going to be. And, like, just... all in all, trying to bring the morale down to keep them from, you know, from doing what little they can do. Because they can help. There are ways in which they can help. But, you know, if they're feeling despondent and just not ready to help and jump in and, you know, feel motivated, then that's one more thing Buffy has to deal with. And clearly the First is trying to make her life as miserable as possible in as many ways as possible. So why wouldn't it try and, you know, get into the minds of her recruits? Like, that, yeah, it makes sense. It just, it's kind of unfortunate.
Buffy's clearly worried that she's losing them. So we get the little twist that she, Willow, and Xander set up her confrontation with the Uber Vamp in this construction site so that they can watch Buffy defeat the Uber Vamp. Were you guys surprised that that was a setup as well?
No, because Willow kept saying, just wait, and she's done that often whenever Buffy's having the battle and everyone's like, should we jump in? But it felt like something else was going on there from the way Willow's reacting. And from how specific it was that Buffy... I mean, it was a little bit too all-knowing, though, that Buffy was, like, trying to have Nosferatu chase her, and then he didn't, and then she looked surprised, but she really wasn't, because she wanted him to go to the Thunderdome, and that was a little bit too convoluted to just be so according to plan, but maybe not. I don't know. Maybe that's part of the plan. She has to act surprised for the Uber Vamp to go and go to the Thunderdome. Whatever. It all worked out, and I'm cool with it, because Nosferatu's dead, and... Like I said, when Nosferatu was first resurrected, Buffy needs something to punch when it comes to the first, seeing as she can't punch something non-corporeal. So now that she's done that, I don't know, we'll see. What else can she punch? Who else can she get angry at if she can't get into the battle? You can only have so many minion battles before it becomes stale.
Do you think there was only one Turok-Con?
I almost felt like at one point they were going to introduce another. Because it felt like there was a scene where the Turok-Con was in one... I'm calling this thing three names. there was like a scene where it was in one spot, and then all of a sudden it was with Drusilla, or Eve, whatever. And it was very, very quick. So it felt like to me that they already had two. There probably is another. That would make sense.
I mean, I only remember seeing the one when the creepy pentagram thing opened, but...
Yeah.
There could be more than one. I mean, clearly this wasn't meant to be, like, the first vampire. It's like, this is, you know, like, as described, like, the cavemen, the Neanderthals of the vampire line. So you wouldn't think it would be the only one. There's probably another one or two or more, but it was the only one I saw, so I wasn't sure whether it was the only one or not.
Giles definitely talks about them like a race or a breed. Not yeah. like he is the Turok-Con. He says he's
right,
like
yeah.
a Turok-Con.
Yeah. I imagine also it's there would be like
the gnarl.
I imagine there might be like really like beefed up ones too with a lot of muscles so that they look even tougher and that they're even a harder battle for Buffy. Because if they just keep bringing back the same looking one, that'll be kind of boring, but they'll probably have another and she'll be like, ah, not again. And she'll have to actually use her friends for help. I mean, it feels like it'd be really simple just to have Willow hold it somehow, like wrap a shield around it. Like she's done that before, or she's had her shield wrapped around her, I should say, when she was evil. Regardless, mm-hmm. we've seen it's possible with magic, and all you would need to do is disable the vampire like that, and then cut off its head. But I guess the first is stopping it from doing that magic. So they wrote around her superpowers. Makes me sad. I want Willow to be not evil, but just right, and help with these battles.
I mean, did you notice that her eyes were, like, the pupils were dilating hardcore when she was doing the shield?
Yeah. I don't know. Are we going to see Eva Willow again? It's like asking if we're going to see Angelus again. You can never really be sure. You can see glimpses, but if you see the full thing, that's something else. Is it worth it? Like, it was a season finale. To bring it back? I don't know. Kristen, do you want to see Eva Willow again?
No. I like that she's trying and you know, her response to being possessed by the first is pretty telling of how she feels. Like it she's terrified to lose control, so I don't see her volunteering to do things. Like Buffy basically has to tell her, you have to do this. Like you have to try and shield us because we don't have any other options. Like she is the last line of defense now. Like she's the, you know, she's the weapon you don't want to use because you don't know just how bad it's going to be. So they're going to hold off and try and, you know, reserve the use of magic here just for that reason. But I don't like Evil Willow. I mean, it was interesting to see, but I like her trying to do good and trying to come back to the world after having all of that go down last season.
Mm.
So were you guys surprised that Buffy slayed the Uber Vamp already? Did you think it was going to last longer than it did?
No. I was cool with it dying right then and there. It was time. It's been around too long already. Because usually Buffy kills That felt like a monster of the week, honestly. So it lasted a lot longer than I expected.
I was a little surprised, but I'm glad to know that these things can be killed. And now that we know how, you know, like a steak isn't going to do it, but, you know, lopping off the head is totally an option. So I didn't necessarily see it coming, but I'm glad to know that we have a way to, you know, get rid of these things.
I wonder if we're going to start using more axes, maybe a chainsaw.
Yeah. Break out the heavy artillery.
Like Ash versus the Evil Dead style. Come out with, like, attached to your arm.
My God, I'm imagining Buffy walking around a cemetery with a chainsaw in hand.
I'm sure there's some art.
It's amazing.
It'd be really, like, really efficient.
All right, so that leaves us with Spike, who spends these two episodes just being tortured, which, do we really need all this torture? Poor Spike. and the first is taking all kinds of forms. She especially takes Drusilla's form. What do you guys think of seeing the first as Drusilla?
You know, I didn't like Drew when she was, like, on the show. I actually liked this version of Drew. A little less baby talk, a little less crazy, but still, like, the first, like, level of crazy. Is it, you know, it's a little bit different. But it was nice to see her back. Like, it's nice to be reminded of what she meant to Spike, and clearly the first chose her because of their connection, so... It's an interesting complication.
Spike does say that Drusilla was crazier than the first.
Yeah, yeah.
Tracer as, so.
I believe that. I wonder if we're really going to have Drusilla come back for real. If she's going to have anything more to do in Buffy, or if this was it. This was her swan song. Maybe she'll come back an angel. I don't know.
And she's out there somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, if Spike's still around, she is too, if you ask me. They'll have something to do together.
Maybe she's back with the slime.
The drippy moose guy?
Demon. Yeah.
Chaos demon, apparently. He's just a drippy moose, though.
It would be interesting to see her reaction to Spike having a soul.
She'd probably talk about getting that icky thing out of him.
That would be interesting. That really would. Like, to see her reacting to it would be... A real trip. Oh my goodness.
So, I was concerned with how they were drowning a vampire here, and that was a thing. Because they just, they acted like they didn't have that as a rule. All of a sudden, they were like, yeah, you need to breathe, huh? And I was like, it was weird.
I mean, Spike smokes.
But that's too. Like a forced inhalation as opposed to like a needed one.
I mean, my headcanon is that it's like a muscle memory thing, and some vampires probably like make the physical motions of it, even though they don't need to, which is probably how Spike is able to smoke. So if he's got like the, you know.
Actually, I think, God, what's his face? Who plays Spike?
James Marsters.
Thank you. My brain fart. He said in some interview that he holds his breath during takes because vampires don't breathe.
Really?
Yeah. Don't quote me on that if it's actually true, but it's been said.
But Spike should not be able to smoke then. Vampires don't breathe. Don't question the science.
Don't question the science.
Well, I mean, I always kind of envisioned it as they don't have to breathe. But in order to fit in, they, you know, breathing regularly while standing in a room with humans is going to make you fit in. Whereas if you're standing awkwardly still and not breathing, like, eventually someone's going to notice. So it would make sense that they don't need the oxygen, but they can breathe, like, just that they can eat, even though they don't need to eat food.
Yeah. Like, he doesn't need to breathe, but he can smoke.
Yeah. So, like, the drowning of him thing, like, it may just be habit from being around living people and breathing because he's with them and used to trying to fit in, that he inhales when he doesn't necessarily need to or something. I don't know. It was weird. I will say that.
And it's just not really that fun to get, like, your head held underwater, even if you're not, like, breathing.
Yeah.
Sure. Maybe it was supposed to be holy water and they changed it and forgot.
It feels like there are other ways of torture that would be more efficient against a vampire. Holding their head underwater would not be my first form of torture against a vampire, if I had to think of one.
Well, the first mostly just seems to be intent on just making him uncomfortable more than anything. Like, the first doesn't really need any information or anything.
Surprising that it kept Spike alive at all. Don't know what the purpose of keeping Spike alive was for it.
Because he wanted to.
I mean, it probably would have been better to kill him, because then they could have impersonated him.
But he already can, because he died once.
Because he's already dead as a vampire. Okay. I just put that together about Drew as well. Oh.
And it has done it many times. Like, Spike has confronted himself.
Yeah, that's true. And it would make sense, you're right, if Buffy already knows.
I mean, there's probably some hope of, like, turning him to the dark side of the Force or whatever.
Or maybe the First just needs something to bide time, since he can't just, like, instantly destroy everything. So torturing Spike sounds like a good time.
Yeah, they need
it's
a
his favorite
plot.
Pastime. Yeah. He needed something to do to, you know, pass the time while he's trying to figure out, you know, what's going on with Buffy.
And the First is a force of pure evil, so they're not going to just, like, hold him and be like, let's have a tea party.
Yeah, yeah. There would be torture involved. Yeah, it sounds right.
But Buffy saves him. Because yes. Did you guys understand that was... Sorry, I'm taking over, Kayla. Go ahead.
I'm just going to say, at the very end of our second episode, Buffy rescues Spike, though Spike at first thinks it's just another manifestation of the First, but she frees him and helps him out. And he's just so awed and thankful that she really came for him after everything he held out for.
Mm-hmm.
Mai, tell us your feelings.
He's so cute and adorable, and he can't believe that it's actually happening. And emotions. I may have cried. Just a little tiny, tiny bit. Because his face is his face.
He genuinely seems odd that she's actually there.
Yeah.
I really came for him.
Actually, like, earlier he gets fooled because the First trips him up. Like, he thinks he's about to escape and then he sees fake Buffy. And then he's captured again or something. And then she actually comes to save him. It's so good, you guys.
And she doesn't say anything to, like, identify herself as the real Buffy. She just kind of silently listens to him and then cuts the ropes and lets him figure it out.
Kind of reminiscent of the Buffy bot when Buffy shows up and kisses him, pretending to be the Buffy bot.
Damn it. Bitch.
I'm giving you shit feels, aren't I?
Yeah.
Mai is feeling all the feels.
You can be our Spike shipper, because Caitlin's our angel shipper, 5 Eva.
Hashtag 5 Eva. It's true.
You must be so happy with all these callbacks to amends, Caitlin.
That episode owns my soul.
Oh. it's your own Rat Amy. That's so sweet. We all have our own Rat Amys, don't we?
Everybody should have a Rat Amy.
Yes, everybody needs one.
Episode title, everyone should have a Rat Amy. All right, so we've got our international titles. We've got the German translates to Showtime. And
I love this.
Oh, that's our second episode. Our first is When the Night Begins. So that's pretty close to Bring on the Night. The French is The Dawn of the Last Day and Exercise in Style, which. Okay.
I mean, you know, Showtime is kind of like it's when you say like it's Showtime, it's time to show your stuff. It's time to like. You know, it's an exercise in style. Like, here's how I get things done kind of thing. That's how that all made sense to me. French is weird.
It's showing off.
I still think it's cute that it's just exercise in style. I find that precious.
It could be the name of a really funny, like, dance yoga tape at the same time.
I mean, the fight in the Thunderdome was an exercise in style and fighting.
I need to like see that scene redubbed with like a 80s workout song. That would be fabulous.
Yes. Exactly.
Do you guys think that the Turrican understands English or just the clicky noises that Drizella makes?
I think he's all about the clicky.
All about that click. About that click.
No English.
All right. So, shall we move on to favorite scenes and favorite lines?
Let's.
So, for Bring on the Night, Mai, what was your favorite scene?
When Spike is all, Buffy believes in me.
Of course it was. Mitch?
Well, it seems like, Caitlin, we have the opposite sides of the same coin here, because I said when Giles was very obviously the first, because he always hugs. Heartbreak.
Yeah, I'll just throw in there that mine was Giles coming back and being like, hey, Brittany, I'm not dead. Or am I? Dun, dun, dun.
Likely.
But
poor Brittany.
Buffy is very happy to see him, and I just like their interactions, like when she's like, are you ever gonna come and visit when there's not an apocalypse? Like, that'd be nice. Alright, and Kristen, your favorite scene from Bring on the Night.
I liked meeting the Slayers to be and like learning about what was going on with all those ladies being killed, and just the evolution of them, you know, kind of getting a first impression and then moving on to being impressed by everything Buffy can do. Like, I loved watching them kind of see exactly what it means to be the Slayer and all of that. So that was my favorite part.
All right. And let's move to favorite lines from Bring on the Night. Mai, what was your favorite line?
Giles saying, sorry to barge in, we have a slight apocalypse.
That line is golden.
Like, you do.
So good.
So good. Really perfect. Mitch?
Mine is when Dawn and Andrew are sassing about, and Dawn's talking about how the enemy's called the first. Andrew says, oh, not very ominous sounding, Dawn. No, it is if you understand the context. Andrew goes, no, an evil name should be like Lex or Voldemort or... I'm like, yes, because they keep bringing Harry Potter references, because Harry Potter was definitely becoming more of a thing at this stage of Buffy. So that's fun.
Oh, Andrew.
But it is if you understand the context.
Yeah.
Kristen.
Mine is a little exchange between Drew and Spike. Drew, as the first, says, do you know why you're alive? And Spike says, never figured you for an existential thought, love. I mean, you hated Paris. I just, as soon as he said it, I about died. That's just, ugh, so great. So Spike, in the middle of all this torture. It's just beautiful.
And yours, Caitlin?
Yes. Mine is Buffy's speech at the very end. Because she's fabulous. So she says, I'm beyond tired. I'm beyond scared. I'm standing on the mouth of hell, and it's going to swallow me whole, and it'll choke on me. We're not ready. They're not ready. They think we're going to wait for the end to come like we always do. I'm done waiting. They want an apocalypse? Well, we'll give them one. Anyone else who wants to run, do it now, because we just became an army. We just declared war. From now on, we won't just face our worst fears. We will seek them out. We will find them and cut out their hearts one by one until the first shows itself for what it really is. And I'll kill it myself. There's only one thing on this earth more powerful than evil, and that's us. Any questions? And I'm just like, that is why she is the big damn hero.
I knew you were going to pick this one because you love all of the Buffy speeches.
And that was a damn good one. Oh,
drop the mic.
And it's so perfect because she looks so tired. She's so beaten up. And it's just in her voice how she really is beyond tired. And she pushes through it.
Well, and when she's sitting in the chair listening to them talking about how beaten she is, like, she looks like she's given up. Like, the look on her face is defeat, and it's tired, and it's everything. And then she walks into the room and delivers the speech, like, without basically any other words. It's beautiful, like, to see that while even when she looks like she's beaten down, like, she's not. She knows what they have to do, and that's what they're going to do.
I can only imagine what the final series voiceover is going to be, Kristen. I'm sure it'll be epic. As we look on and Red Amy packing her things and going off to greener pastures.
Buffy and says, her tiny rat suitcase.
Get her tiny rat suitcase.
And all was well.
Yeah, that's what Buffy says. It's all as well. And Red Amy's riding off into the sunset with her tiny suitcase. Yes, it's what I need.
All right, let's move on to favorite scenes and favorite lines from Showtime. Mai, what was your favorite scene?
Spike saying, "She'll come for me. She'll come for me." And then the first is all, "Nah, son, she won't."
And cruelly doing it as Buffy.
Yeah.
Says, "I won't come for you." Mitch.
Mine is when the actress, Lelaine, that plays Miranda from Lizzie McGuire, was being very Miranda from Lizzie McGuire, because she was literally the same character. She acted the same, and it was great. I miss Lizzie McGuire.
This sentence made no sense to me. But I believe you.
And Kristen.
Mine is Anya and Giles and the Bell Jacques eye thing, just because them standing in, like, this wind tunnel as it's trying to tell them things was just hilarious. Like, the whole idea of it and it giving them sass when they start, like, kind of being exasperated with the things it was saying, like, it was a good scene, just a solid scene all around.
I still like the hamburger better.
Yeah. It's hard to beat the hamburger.
All right, and favorite lines. Oh, Kristen, I stole yours. I'm sorry.
Hey, what's your favorite scene?
Oh, my favorite scene, that's right. Mine was the big reveal that Buffy, Willow, and Xander had planned the whole confrontation, that this was all done on purpose. And I liked that. I liked that they set it up. All right, favorite lines. Your favorite line.
I have two, and they're both from Buffy. The first is, "Welcome to the Hellmouth." And the second is, "Here endeth the lesson."
You want to share that fun fact from earlier in the doc?
Yeah, it's been said three times in the series. And the first was by Karen's favorite character, the Master. And the second time was by my favorite character, Spike.
So, and now by Buffy.
Yeah, everyone's favorite character.
Mitch, your favorite line from Showtime.
Mine is the exchange that Molly and Rona have, where they're talking about eating, and the British Slayer girl, one of them, says, "Fair enough, I'm a bit peckish myself." And the new girl, Rona, says, "Bit what as well?" And Anya comes in with, "That's English for hungry." Rona goes, "Oh, here I thought hungry was English for hungry."
Rona is not here for any of this.
She's not. Peckish meself. I died.
Kristen.
Mine was I'm the thing that monsters have nightmares about. It's just such a good line. Mm-hmm. Such a good line. And mm-hmm. I love, you know, her barbs that she's always been trading with vampires as she, like, kills them have been great. But this is, like, the uber vamp, and she's, you know, slaying it with even with her lines, and it's fabulous. I love it.
Awesome. That is also my favorite line. And then when she goes, "Welcome to the Thunderdome."
Yeah, it's just good stuff, man.
How many times have you said that line in real life, Caitlin?
Never, actually.
Never?
Never.
Not even online?
Nope.
Just me, then.
But now I'm going to start.
Good.
I've been holding on to a gif of Buffy saying, "I'm the thing that monsters have nightmares about," that I've been waiting to whip out till we got to this episode, and now I get to use it all the time, and I'm very excited about it.
<That's> You don't have to be afraid to whip it out.
All right, so that wraps up our discussion for Buffy this week, just Buffy. If you guys have any thoughts on these two episodes or anything we had to say about these episodes, please send your thoughts to us. You can email us, keep it spoiler-free, please, at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Tweet to us @re_watchable. Comment on this post on hypeable.com. Head over to Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can also rate us on iTunes, which helps other people find the show, and that's super helpful. And if you rate us 5 stars, then Karen will coddle your vampire soul.
Aww.
All right. So we've got some listener feedback. So to read the tweets, Mitch and Kristen, would you like to take the first couple?
Sure. So from Rachel at SVEVA22. I'm not sure, Caitlin, you might have to answer this for us because you were on last week. They asked, "What is the Hallmark movie you recommended on the last episode?" I tried to go back and listen to it, but I couldn't find it. And that was probably something Brittany said. But yeah, do you know, Caitlin, what was the movie Brittany recommended? If not, we'll have to have Brittany respond back to you.
I don't remember. Hallmark movies pretty much go in one ear out the other for me.
Fair enough.
So we'll have to get Brittany to respond.
Yeah.
She and Danya have been enjoying some Hallmark Christmas movies.
The next one is from Mariah Not Carrie at Mariah Lovegood. And she says, "Kate was brought up on the most recent rewatchable, and I just saw that actress in a great holiday movie called A Christmas Kiss. She plays a character that is fun to dislike." And she asks if Brittany has seen it. So Brittany will have to, she's got a few Hallmark movie fans who are looking for answers. So
I have a feeling she would have seen it.
Probably. I mean, that sounds about right. Mitch, do you want to do the next one?
Sure. This is from Jeff at Jalen Jade. Said, "Eagerly waiting for Rewatchable to finally learn what Principal Wood is. I'm going with what as in Rat Amy in disguise, but what could be a creature?"
Oh, Mitch, you're cute. You're really cute.
I mean, I will say, Natalie did tell me I will simply die when I learn. So, how else would Mitch die in Rewatchable if not for another Rat Amy appearance?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. And Danielle, friend of the podcast, says, "Courtney Draper, Felicia Day, and Lelaine are all potential slayers? Man, the universe sure knows how to pick them. Now I'm curious who else is going to show up." Yeah, I recognized Lelaine and Felicia Day. I didn't recognize Courtney Draper. She's the girl, I think it's Annabelle, who ran off and died. She was in a bunch of Disney Channel original stuff, like Smart House and one of the other ones, I think. But I recognized her face, and she had like a slight accent, so I was like, I think that's her. I'm not sure, but Thanks, Danielle. I'm happy to know it truly is.
And then lastly, we have from Rachel at, once again, SVEVA22, who said, almost caught up because I want to experience season 7 with you. Do we know if Buffy still has the cross necklace from Angel? I'm going to say yes. She did keep on to that closet ring for quite a while, so I feel like she probably has it away in a box.
Yeah, she's not getting rid of any of her Angel mementos.
See, what I'm most concerned about is Buffy still working at Double Meat Palace? Because I need to know.
I mean, I don't think her job at the school is full-time.
She must be doing it at night.
And how do they feel about the open wounds on her face? Serving at the Double Meat Palace.
Just going to throw in that, you know, it was really unclear.
True.
I'm going to get a quit.
But she might need to pull some more shifts the way that they're breaking windows.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so as usual, we're going to wrap up with our newbie predictions for the next episodes and tell you what to watch next. So we've got Kristen's contemplations and Mitch's musings for Angel. We're back to Angel. 408, Habeas Corpses. That's clever. And Buffy, 712, Potential. Take it away, guys.
Yeah, I love the title, Habeas Corpses. Like, I'm pretty sure that is the perfect title for an episode of, like, a supernatural drama. I'm so impressed. Okay, so clearly, Angel 408 is talking about habeas corpus, which is really hard to say when you said corpses six times, which is legal mumbo-jumbo. And I'm trying to remember exactly what it means.
I was reading through the Wikipedia page for the original, habeas corpus. I think it's saying you have the right to be held trial. Like, you can fend for yourself in court, essentially.
Right to a fair trial. That sounds right, yeah.
So, this probably means, like... So it translates into that you have body. So if we're saying that you have corpses, that probably means that a lot of people are dying, apocalypse, hellfire. Maybe Angel just finally kills Connor because he's done seeing him back on his girl. That'd be great.
Think about where we left them.
Yeah.
Very apocalypse-y. Very apocalypse-y.
And the worst thing ever happening.
Yeah, the kiss.
Yes.
More than that.
As if we could forget. It's stuck in there. Despite wanting to forget, it's stuck. Yeah.
It somehow felt more incestuous than Game of Thrones ever has.
Oh, boy. Okay. And moving on. Buffy 712 potential. I mean, we've got all of these potential slayers running around. So it makes me wonder if, like, one of them will really stand out as, like, the next one, or if this has something to do with something completely unrelated.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't think about the fact that any of these could be the potentials. I don't know. It could be anyone. We could have someone else picking up some slack. I don't know. Maybe Xander has more potential. He's not really done too much. Dawn.
Or maybe Faith shows up and shows all the potential she has to be the best slayer ever, and she just shows up and is... killer, and it's just like, bam,
that would be great.
Here's Faith.
We need Faith. Give us a little Faith now, please.
I'd like to see Faith. We could use some help.
The world needs hope, Obi-Wan.
Yeah, you're my only hope. Okay.
All right, well, we will see what happens in those next episodes. That's gonna do it for us this week. So until next time, my name is Caitlin.
I'm Mike.
I'm Mitch.
And I'm Kristen.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.